Howdy, folks. I'm Daryl Frank, and you're listening to Frankly Speaking, People and Stories of the Seacoast. Always by my side is Jeff Robert, who makes this all happen for us, and nothing to talk about good from this weekend as both teams suffered devastating losses. My Bears and your Ravens.
Beautiful time. Love that game.
Being facetious. And I couldn't be happier enough to have this episode's guest. A lot of you will remember the Yokins Family Restaurant. We're honored to have Kevin McLeod here today to talk about Yokins, but not just Yokins. We're going to kind of go through his early childhood as well as all of the other impact he has made throughout the Seacoast with other restaurants that you may or may not be aware of, what he's doing today. And as we go through this, I think you're going to be very impressed with what Kevin has put together as a resume as he's gone through his life. Kevin, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Thank you. So let's start with the early childhood. I know that...
I don't remember most of it.
Lafayette School.
Well, I started at the Farragut School, the old Farragut School.
Now, is that the Bill Keith building now, or is that...
No, that was the old high school.
Which one's the Farragut?
The Farragut School is gone.
Gone?
It's where the hill is. It was on the corner of High and School Street.
Okay.
School Street's no longer there.
Right.
I think it's a parking lot for the...
One of the hotels.
Yeah. But yeah, we came here in 1945.
Yep.
My family, just the McLeod family.
Right.
I'll backstep a little bit. The way the McLeods and the Yokins became involved with one another was that my dad's sister was a nurse in Bedford.
Bedford, Mass?
Bedford. Or it might have been Fall River. She might have worked at, I can't remember which hospital she worked at, but it was one of those. And it just so happens where she had to walk to the bus stop, and on that corner there was a store, Yokins Grocery.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle kind of had an eye on her, and that's before I knew him, of course. Anyhow, he got sick. I don't know how long after he had started noticing her, and she was his nurse. And they started dating, and one thing led to another, and they got married. So after a couple of years, I don't know the exact timeline, but Harry Yokin came to Portsmouth.
Yeah.
And he opened a small restaurant first of all, he opened the fruit and produce on Market Street.
Okay.
Diagonally across from the Moffat Ladd House. It's the building now that they put a lot of condos in, and I think it's a Portsmouth soap company. But anyhow, I had the fruit and produce business there, and he had a little restaurant on Market Square called the 55 Restaurant. And right after the war, and near the end of the war, he bought a big piece of property out on Lafayette Road. And it was called the Parkway Restaurant, or just the Parkway. There was 15 or 16 cabins there, and there was a main meeting house where people could bring stuff up. Originally, it was just so that the cabin people could bring their stuff in there to eat and whatever, but then whoever owned it made it a restaurant. Right. So my uncle bought all that property. And so now he had this idea that he wanted to make that restaurant a little bigger and better, and to have a takeout. So he's got a fruit and produce business going. He's got this other restaurant going. He's got this. He's got a startup. So he said, I need help with the fruit and produce business. And my dad was probably going to be out of work anyhow because he worked in a munitions factory in Springfield, Vermont. Called them foundries back then.
Yeah.
So asked my dad if he'd come over and run the fruit and produce. So that's how we got, and that was in 1945. So that's how we got to Portsmouth.
So you were in Springfield at the time?
No, we lived in Charlestown, New Hampshire.
I
was born at Springfield. My brother was born in Bellas Falls because it was the closest hospital.
Right.
Charlestown.
Yep. Charlestown. Carlton Fisk from Charlestown as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Carlton Fisk. Yeah. I still don't think there's a stoplight in Charlestown.
One of the areas, I had a contracting office in Claremont, and we used to drive through Charlestown. I think you're absolutely right. I don't think there's still a light there at all.
Yeah.
So...
We lived right on Main Street, right next to the fire station. I haven't been back there for many years. Anyhow, so that's how we got to Portsmouth.
So is the Parkview where the Yokins sits right now, or where sat, as a lot of our listeners will remember it sitting?
Well, that little restaurant that was there became the Whaler Room.
Okay.
That was the first dining room.
Okay.
So I went to Farragut School.
Yeah.
From first grade through the fifth grade. Halfway through the fifth grade, we moved out to Lafayette Road, and so I changed to Lafayette School. Yeah. But yeah, it was a great neighborhood. We had a lot of characters downtown. Growing up downtown Portsmouth was really interesting. And it was a tough town because of all the military and that. There's a lot of fights at night, and a couple of us shined shoes on Market Street when we were like 9, 10 years old.
No kidding.
Yeah, and but all the drunks were good to us, you know. we'd advertise 10 cents for a shine and they all flip a quarter, you know, when they're going to go back to the base, they're all a little loaded. So
yeah.
Yeah, and nobody bothered us. I mean, like we talked about before, we'd always have two or three of us together. So, and everything was close. You go to the basketball games down to junior high. Mm-hmm. You know, the high school was right in town, right in that yellow building, the Bill Keefe building.
Yeah, so did the high school have its own gym or was every, where
no.
was?
No, everything happened at the junior high school.
So all the basketball
games. Basketball, yeah, all those teams that went to the New England from Portsmouth High School played in the junior high school gym.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, because that's where in fifth and sixth grade, playing for Vinnie Marconi, it was all at the old junior high. And those stands were awful.
Oh, yeah.
They were just literally awful.
You could get about 100 people in there. That would be a packed house. And they had that little balcony.
Yes.
That's where all those guys used to sneak up there and watch it from there. Nobody would know we were there.
That's funny. That's funny.
So
I got to ask, because in doing the show prep, I noticed that you went to Berwick Academy.
I did.
I also want to notice that there was a common thread there that how you, you know, and I know I'm bouncing out of there, but that loyalty to your friends at that early age seemed to follow with you to your employees, your loyalty to them. In 05, you were recognized Distinguished Achievement Award, Class of 61. When did that kind of come about as far as you going to Berwick Academy?
I graduated high school. I couldn't have got into a dog catching school. You know, it was so bad it was. And so my dad wanted me to go to college, and I couldn't get in any place. I could get into UNH, but I'd have to be on academic restriction for the first year.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, you go to Berwick Academy. I went to Berwick Academy. I was the only one in the history of the school, and it was established back in, I think, 1783, to have a motor vehicle on campus because my father insisted that I work on weekends. So I had my 57 Chevy parked right outside our little dormitory there, right up on top of the hill. And because they had a few other dormitories that were off campus a little bit.
Right.
But I was a PG student there for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my close associates are still my close associates and my high school friends.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I made it to college to flunk out in the first semester with a 0.9 average. So dad's wishes didn't come true. He never lived long enough to see me graduate from college, which I did 25 years later.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So, well, it's funny because we were talking earlier about kind of some of the similar paths we've kind of had. I went back to school at 56 to get my degree and graduated at 58 years old.
Right.
My degree so I could do, you know, be a funeral director in Balmer. So it's like, and that's probably my greatest regret is my dad not knowing.
Yeah.
Never seeing it.
Yeah.
But I'm hopefully convinced
that yours
is looking at you and mine's looking at me.
Yeah.
And they're probably both looking at us saying, what are these two guys doing right now?
Yeah. I have that same regret. And the other regret I have that my dad never saw me sober.
That's a great accomplishment.
But like you, I think he knows.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, someday I'll either find out or not. That's another whole subject, you know.
Yeah.
If it happens, it's a bonus.
Right.
That's all I
absolutely.
Say, you know?
Absolutely.
That's a big bonus.
That's funny. So uncle buys the land in 45.
Yeah.
Yokins opens up at 47.
Yeah.
And you said that the Whaler Room was the park.
That was called the Parkway.
The Parkway.
Yeah. Because they called US Route 1.
Yes.
It was Lafayette Road.
Correct.
So they called it Lafayette Parkway.
So from 47, you guys changed it, and then you guys build this. How did that
Well, he took a couple of years to... I don't think there was anybody smarter in town than Harry Yocum.
Yeah.
He was really brilliant. He owned property, and he'd speculate, but he worked hard. He just knew things. So he didn't want to rent cottages, so he sold them to some guy in Hampton, and then he moved them.
Okay.
You know, he said like $600 a piece, move these things off there, or $200. He just wanted to get rid of them, put a parking lot in there, you know.
Rather than pay for demo, he sells the property. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sells the.
Yeah. So he sold them, and then he sold the little corner on Beverly Hill in Lafayette, to the Sun Oil Company, and they opened a Sunoco station there. So he made enough money by selling that corner to pay back what he paid for the property.
So that small section, it literally was a gas station up until maybe, I don't know how long ago, but...
Well, I sold the property in September of 2004.
All right, so it all tied to that the September 26th, 04 then.
Yeah, then they tore everything down. Yeah. Shaw's bought everything.
Yeah.
And...
But it was not a big gas station. And that's kind of like the insight that you said that your uncle had. That's huge at that time.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it paid back what he owed on it, and everything was free at that point. Then he could concentrate on renovating the present building that was the parkway.
Right.
And then on the left-hand side of it, put in a takeout order window and a pickup window. And I'm trying to remember if he sold ice cream there or not. I don't know. Mostly fried foods, fried clams and fried shrimp, hot dogs, of course.
Yeah.
Hamburgers. As soon as he opened, he's doing a Cracker Jack business,
right.
You know. And then he opened the restaurant and put a kitchen in there, and that became the Whaler Kitchen, we called it.
Yeah.
But that was part of when the takeout went away, and he wanted to get into a realistic restaurant right. business, and he could turn that part of the building into a little bit of a gift shop. But before that, he was buying English bone china cups and saucers and dessert plates. And he'd have them around this little bit of a lobby he had. People were grabbing those up. They were beautiful. They were from England. And so he started an import-export business.
Why not?
So then when he started that little bit of a gift shop, he put these hammered brass plaques.
Right.
That's what it all started with, was the English bone china and these hammered brass plaques. I don't know if you've seen these circular things. They're all hammered brass.
Yeah.
Handmade. So he's importing those, and he's selling to other businesses, other places, and he's showing them there. And so that's where the gift shop was born.
Right.
And at the time, there was the Whaler Room, but I don't even think it had a name at that point. It was just Yocum's.
Yeah.
And then you walked in that door, and there you were, a little bit of a lobby, and then the dining room. And it was two circular bars that probably seated 10 each, two horseshoe bars.
Yep.
So that was 20 seats, and I think he had like 7 booths. So that was it.
Yeah.
Till 1954 when he put on the Spouter Room.
So, yeah, because by the when you were done or in its heyday, you were serving 3,000 meals a day.
Yeah. About. Oh, yeah, easy.
But you were working 18 hours a day as well. So how did that space evolve? Was that the addition of the second room as well?
Well, I'll give you the short story. He got so busy there when he had the Spouter Room now. He called it the Spouter Room.
Yeah.
And that seated about 200. So now he's got 230 seats, something like that.
Yeah.
And he bought a couple of two-car garages and stuck them together and made a prep kitchen. And you had to walk outside in the wintertime to take the sauces from the two-car garages to get to the main kitchen and all that. It was kind of crazy. But he was getting so busy that he wanted my dad to come in. So the date's not going to be exact, but I'm going to say 19, let me see, when I started there in 52, 54. I think it was probably 1955. I started working there when I was 12 years old in 54. And my dad worked there for a year, and the promise was that my dad would run the place, and Harry Yocum was going to take some time for himself and all that. Well, it didn't work out so well. So my dad left and went to work for Hannaford Brothers.
Okay.
And a couple of years, about a year and a half later. He did very well at Hanford. Matter of fact, got offered a very good job in their main office. It was in South Portland at the time, yeah. Something like that. So he put it to the family. Uncle Harry called. He wants me to come back. It's a new deal. I can lease the place, so I'll be the boss, or I can go with Hanford. We didn't want to leave.
Right. You want to stay in Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he took it. And then my dad put on another dining room, Moby Dick room.
The Moby Dick room, yep.
Yeah. And then he put on the Atlantic room, which also had a bakery and a coffee shop out front. And we also had another kitchen now in order to serve those
additional
the Moby Dick room and part of the spouter room, and the other kitchen would do that. In the summertime, on a good August Saturday, if it rained, we'd do over 4,000 meals.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
That's crazy.
I mean, and the most expensive item on the menu back in those days was probably like $2.95.
I was looking at, somebody had posted one of the old menus. I tell you, to this day, one of my favorite meals. Say Yolkins was still open and I'm on death row. I'm getting the roast beef, mashed potatoes, and corn with the brown gravy. That was one of my favorite meals as a kid.
The other one people liked was called boneless turkey. It was two big chunks of turkey, probably a half an inch thick, and dipped in tempura batter and deep fried with a supreme sauce. It was like a yellow sauce on the top with mashed potatoes and vegetable. That was probably $1.98 or something like that. Well, we had dollar complete dinners all the way up to 1969.
That's the other piece. Sorry, it's like it was a family restaurant, so the family could go out to eat.
Yeah. Sundays after church, family of five would come in, $5. And they had appetizer, they had soup or juice.
Yeah.
They got rolls and butter. Now in some places you got to pay to get rolls and butter.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, you wanted butter with your roll.
Yeah. And you got a beverage, which is either coffee, tea, milk, or a soda. And then you got like chiffon pie or ice cream or pudding for dessert. I mean, it was, or Jell-O.
Yeah.
I mean, for a buck. Plus you got potatoes and vegetable with your meal. Yeah.
So when did the banquet hall come on? Every high school event had a steamship buffet. It was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
I was even old by then. The banquet started when my dad put on the Moby Dick room. He did it in such a way that he didn't put up any solid walls. It was just a big room, probably 2,500 square feet, maybe 3,000 square feet. So it was like 50 by 60. But we had these portable dividers to put booths in each little section. We had three sections in there, but we could take those apart, take them down, and set up for a party of 200. So that was where the banquet started, the Moby Dick room.
Yeah.
And then we'd put the Atlantic room in. We put a big sliding door so that you could connect them into one, but a sliding door so that we could ferry people out to there and we could have banquets in that area too. Then when my brother and I took over, we took that whole wall down so that you could open up the Moby Dick room and the Atlantic room as one. And then when we got done with it, when Harry and I built the conference center, now you could open up the whole thing, 13,000 square feet. We could seat over 1,000. That's the quick evolution of
how that happened.
But along the way, there was other things I see on your list here.
Before we move on to those, let me ask you about the saving of the sign, because I think that I love the fact that was saved.
Well, unbeknownst to me, when I sold the property, and for those that are listening, there was a Comfort Inn at the time, the hotel that Harry and I built, that was never going to be part of a sale. So I kept that property and then sold, I think it was like 5.25 acres to Shaw's Supermarkets. Yeah. And I was just so tied up. It took 2 years to put that deal together, and it was driving me crazy. So I forgot a couple of details. One of the details was that when I signed the final papers, the sign was sitting on the property. They owned everything on the property. So they owned the sign. Of course, they didn't own the rights to the sign,
right?
What it said or how it worked or anything like that, but they owned the physical property. So they took it down and put it, especially all the neon, they packed it away and all that. And then the store went into storage. I didn't even know where it was until a few years later, like 4 years later, these other four guys came along, the four amigos.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and bought the property from Shaw's. Once they got all the buildings situated in there, they came to me and said, you know, me and the bank got together. We'd like to put that sign back up. We'd like to call this whole thing Yolkin's Crossing and put the whale back up there and all that. And I said, let me just write a little piece of paper here legally giving you the rights to use the sign, that, but you can't use it for other than to advertise this property. You can't put a Yolkin's restaurant
right.
in there, in other words. So I said, yeah, that's great. So that cost them $60,000 to get that sign
restored.
Yeah. It's about 3 feet lower than it was originally. You couldn't drive a car underneath between the posts, but I think one of your classmates did that when it was in front of Yolkin's.
So many of my classmates, and look, before we jump into the other stuff, so many of my classmates worked at the kitchen. It was a culture, and I mean,
even when I was in high school, in those days, the early days, we didn't serve alcohol. But I think you had to be 16 years old in order to work past 7 o'clock, and we were open till 8 o'clock. So I had a lot of my friends who were juniors and seniors in high school back in those days. I graduated in the 60s, so we'll say in 58 and 59, we had all my friends were working there.
Yeah.
You know, waitresses, guys working in the kitchen, cooks, prep, whatever, you know? And it made me feel bad. One time I came back from the racetrack one time when I got hurt, and first person I saw was Billy Wilson scrubbing pots in the pot room. We were both 16 years old. He's one of my best friends.
Past the hour of when they could work?
Well, no, this is in the middle of the afternoon.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, but 16, you could work past 7 o'clock in the old days.
Okay.
Yeah, you could work till 9 o'clock maybe, but you could only work X amount of hours a week. And I always felt bad about that because we had some disadvantaged kids that worked for me from the projects, and they were kind of the main money winner for their families and that. They couldn't get any overtime. They were dying to work overtime. Yeah. You know, pay us under the table or whatever you can do. And I said, no, I can't do that. I can't risk all this to do that.
Yeah.
I'd love to help you, but so I said, just work hard. I'll give you some more money.
And I mean, I tell you, when I was going through the prep for the show, it was like just the quotes of the people that were either at the last banquet, the venue for
the last hurrah.
Yeah. They were like, this was family. This, you know, I met my husband here. I did this there. It's just a family culture.
350 couples married.
I was going to ask you, 350.
Well, that's the latest count I got when we had the last hurrah. It's been 20 years.
Wow.
Since we closed the restaurant. And they did a lot of research. A lot of the waitresses got together as a group. Then they did some research, and they said as far as they could figure it, that mark in time, it was 350 couples. Yeah. And a lot of them were right there that night. Probably 20 couples that met at Yolkin's were at that function that night.
I mean, in testament to it is you guys have, there's a Facebook page of all the people that worked at Yolkin's.
Yeah, I have nothing to do with that.
That's awesome.
I don't know how to do Facebook. I'm 82 years old. What do you want already?
So let's talk a little bit about the other restaurants, because I mean, I think it's a hell of a legacy if just on Yolkin's by itself.
Yeah, it is. That's enough, right?
Yeah, but there's more to the story, so to speak.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you want to work our way down Route 1?
Well, no, we'll work our way up 4 and 16.
Perfect. Okay, let's go there.
Yeah, because that was the first one.
Okay.
That was in 1970. My dad did live long enough to see that open.
Can I see if I'm correct? It was a fisherman with a yellow raincoat on.
No, that was in the Moby Dick room. That was Captain Ahab.
Okay.
Yeah,
all
but
right,
we did have a little funny fisherman figure on, because it was called the Mariner, but it was an Italian Mariner.
Okay.
So it was an Italian restaurant.
Yeah.
And we bought the old James restaurant in Dover Point.
Now, that's before where Newark's is now. It's where, like, the motor vehicle department is? Is that where
it was?
Well,
we were 400 yards east of the DMV.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all what? Entryways to the bridge or whatever now.
Yeah.
You know, the DMV is there and Newark's is still there. even before that, though, my brother and my father opened a restaurant, Yokin's, in Winthrop, Maine. And my cousin Dan Yokin got out of the military, and he opened a Yokin's in Danvers. But that was totally independent of us.
That was. Because I remember going, when I'd go to Red Sox games with my father, it was right on Route 1.
Yeah, it was.
The sign, at least the sign was.
No, the whole restaurant was there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, then it became Cherry Stones, I think, after that. And I think it's gone completely now. I'm not sure. But anyhow, the restaurant in Winthrop, Maine, it was, I wouldn't say it was mismanaged, but it was just, these are country folk up there, and they have a different way of life. And, you know, they're just a little slower moving maybe, but it was a more relaxed atmosphere. Like the waitress would sit down when you have a cigarette.
Hopefully not with the rest, not with the family
with
the booth.
With the customers.
Oh, they would.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was because they'd have their neighbors come, oh, we're going to have lunch. Oh, yeah. And they sit down and, you know, and I that's just a little too friendly, you know.
Yeah, a little bit much.
So, whatever. It was a beautiful area of the world. Obviously, it didn't make it.
Right.
You know, it lasted a couple of years, and that was it. I was old enough at next point to do the Mariner restaurant, and I wanted to be, that was my shot to get away.
Mm-hmm. Make your mark.
Yeah, and do my own thing. Problem was John Barleycorn was waiting there for me when I got there. That's another story. I don't know how I did it, but it was successful. And then I would say three years later maybe, we were doing pretty good at Yokin's, doing pretty good at the Mariner, so we decided to, I don't know if the Big Scoop came next or the Stakeout came next, but they were pretty close to one another. So, yeah, we bought that in the old, with the Stakeout was the old Town Line Motel.
Yep.
And they had a dining room there. And so we ran the 15-unit motel, and we had the Stakeout restaurant with the crystal ballroom that was, because we had crystal chandeliers in there.
Yep.
We had a stage. We had entertainment with Hot Property, the band. And it couldn't get near the place on a Saturday night.
No kidding.
Yeah. It was a steakhouse.
Yeah.
But on the sign it said STAKE, like a police stakeout.
Okay.
And it was Guido on the sign with a Tommy gun.
No kidding.
There was bullet holes all in the sign. You know, I think I put those in there. But...
That became
Hector's Country Kitchen. Yeah.
Hector's Country Kitchen.
Yeah. I think we were a little ahead of our time on, on that. It was an old fashioned steakhouse.
Yeah.
We aged our beef. We had an aging room in the basement that had the temperature control. Yeah. And we served all prime beef. It was stupendous, really. And then we put on a buffet there on Saturday nights. There were two sittings, but it was, you know, for like $9.95. Plus you got entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, you don't stay open too long doing that. Anyhow, it was fun. I was still having fun then.
Yeah. So then you have the Big Scoop as well. You mentioned the Big Scoop.
Yeah, Big Scoop. Big Jim Geister was the manager there. He came with the place.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Good guy. And he and his wife lived at our motel. His wife managed the motel for us at the Stakeout. And Jim ran the ice cream place. Yeah.
Now, was it always ice cream? Because I do vaguely remember they used to do burgers and...
We put food in. And then the town got after us because you have to have restrooms. The septic system wasn't able to... except that with grease traps and all the rest of the thing that you got to have. So, you know, because we wanted to put fried food in there too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Yokin's was, in those days, you know, before the health craze came about, you know, fried clams, fried scallops, fried shrimp, fried onion rings, French fries. I mean, it was, they gobbling that stuff up.
Right.
I would say right up to maybe 1975, 60% of our menu at Yokin's was fried food. After 75, it started going the other way. By the time I closed in 2004, I bet we weren't doing 20%
fried foods.
Yeah. It's all coming out of the broiler, saute, off the top, stovetop.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, things change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like fried food. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's very tasty.
Yeah.
I mean, I still love the Dinnerhorn's fried haddock. It's very good.
Yep.
I try to consciously knock off some of the breading so that I can feel better mentally about it. So I eat about half of the crust.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. We'd like to take the time to thank our sponsors. Jeff Big Daddy Goss, owner of the Clipper Tavern, located at 75 Pleasant Street in downtown Portsmouth. Skip the drive-thru, make the trip for a Mac Daddy burger, wings, or any of the daily specials. Also, enjoy the daily drink specials, and yes, they are open 365 days a year. If you're looking for the best steak sandwich on the seacoast, head over to Jitto Super Steak at 3131 Lafayette Road in Portsmouth. Whether you're looking for the steak and cheese sandwich, the steak and egg, or the steak bomb sandwich, they can match your appetite like no other. Also offering pizza, burgers, and a full bar. At either location, please drink responsibly. Also, we'd like to take the time to thank Javer and Wood Funeral Home, located in historic Portsmouth. Has been serving all faiths since 1854, offering a wide variety of traditional and cremation options. As the oldest and largest in Portsmouth, it has been blessed to serve over 25,000 families. Visit them at www.jvwoodfuneralhome.com or call to schedule an appointment at 603-436-1702, located at the Benjamin F. Webster House, 84 Broad Street in Portsmouth. Also, Brianna Frank Beauty, working out of Amore 24, 33 Main Street in Dover, able to fulfill all of your hair needs from colors to cuts to extensions and more. Mention Frankly Speaking at the time of your appointment and receive 20% off your entire service. Does not include retail. Please reach out to her at 603-842-4172 or book online at www.amore24dover.com. Look for her also on Instagram at Brianna Frank Beauty. And last but not least, Tasca Funeral Home in Dover, Grandin Funeral Home in Rochester, and McIntyre McCooey Funeral Home in South Berwick, Maine, are licensed life celebration homes. They are there for you 24/7, 365 days a year to meet your needs. Immediate or long-term solutions are offered and handled by experienced and compassionate staff. Visit them at www.taskerfuneralservice.com or call 603-742-4961 to schedule an appointment at any of the three facilities. So now, we're selling in 04. You still have the quality in.
Yeah.
You're still active in the community. You're a trustee with the cemetery.
I'm the president of the Society for the Preservation of South Cemetery. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's such a history down there. People call it South Cemetery, and I'm kind of explaining this as I look at Jeff, because I know Kevin knows. It's like a conglomeration, really, of five separate?
Yeah, five. Five cemeteries.
Five cemeteries within...
In the same confines. And yeah. Actually, it's like a park. People go through there to walk around and...
Yeah,
we ask them not to bring dogs, but yeah. You know they ride their bikes, they run through there. You find people sitting down by the water in Harmony Grove, part of the cemetery, sitting down in the water. It's a beautiful area.
Well, when I was working for Tom, and I need to give Tom a shout out for allowing us to record here today at Javer and Wood on 84 Broad Street, Portsmouth, where I got my start in funeral service. But there isn't people in that new section that you just referred to on the water. They almost, I mean, yeah, they're going through a real awful time, but the fact that their loved one is down by the water, it's a calming effect. It's a beautiful, it is, for lack of a better term, it's a beautiful cemetery.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
You know?
You don't feel spooky at all in there. Nope. And there's one guy that was buried down there on his gravestone that says, "Finally got my waterfront property."
That's awesome.
My best friend, Billy Pafford, is buried down there.
Billy.
One of the Pafford family.
That's where I was going to go with
renowned,
it.
That would be Brian's uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Bruce, right. Brucey's brother.
That's what I was thinking of Brian's dad.
Brian's dad is Jimmy.
Is Jimmy. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
He's passed away.
Yeah. That was the last service I can remember, funeral service, going with my dad to was here. And the place was banged out. We were sitting in the back room because we were a little bit late.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no.
That was Jimmy's?
That was Jimmy's.
The Sarge.
Yeah, the Sarge.
Yeah?
Yeah. Good guy. All three boys spoke. They did. All three did great jobs. But you ever going to slow down? is my question.
Oh, well, I gave up a lot of the boards I was on. You notice the jacket I had.
Yeah, well, I saw that. I was wondering, are you there or were you there with the Portsmouth Housing?
The Portsmouth Housing Authority split into two entities, I'm going to say 20 years ago. One agency couldn't own the properties and also rent them and maintain them, so that they had to have two separate entities to do that. So they started this other board called Portsmouth Housing Limited.
Okay.
And I was the president of that board.
Yeah.
Teddy Connors got me.
God rest his soul.
Yeah. God rest his soul. I loved him.
Yeah, great guy.
He's just a wonderful human being and did so much for this community that goes unsung.
Absolutely.
Every building that the Postal Housing Authority built before Craig got here was built by Teddy Connors. They dedicated the cottage to him at the hospital there. But he got me, Ruthie asked him to find somebody, Ruthie Griffin.
Yeah, God rest her soul, too, as well.
Who was the president of, or the chairman of the Postal Housing Authority. Yeah. And so Teddy asked me to come on. I think Teddy was president of the limited board and asked me to come on. And so after a year, he said, he nominated me to be president. He was starting to slow down a little bit too.
Yeah.
So, but he came to every meeting with me and we did a lot. And he got me involved in the cemetery too. He was the president of the society.
He was.
Yeah. And he made me treasurer. And it was basically only the two of us. There was a couple of other board members, but they hadn't had a meeting in years.
Yeah.
So we started doing stuff and got the board involved again. And so God bless Teddy Connors.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think when I realized that I was still here. I was still at J. Vern. And I had to go down and see Tim, and he was with you because you guys were in the midst of restoring a section of the stone wall.
Stone walls, yeah.
You know? And not an easy task, and that's when I realized that you were part of that as well. So
And like Teddy, he was starting to shell off some of these activities that he was involved in. I stopped doing the boards, and I retired from like three boards, and now I'm on the Salvation Army, and I'm on this board. That's about it.
So let me ask you this: when you sit there and you look back. And I always ask, I seem to always digress to this question. What advice would you give a young Kevin if you were to start over again as you're kind of?
I'd give the advice to young Kevin's parents. Put him in reform school.
Oh, that's awesome.
Get him out of here. I'm a complete believer in education. I wasn't that way when I was younger. So it is really a parental thing, kind of, to get the kids interested in you know, because kids look at, they're in the first grade, they're not too interested. Second grade, well, they're starting to read and write and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So they're happy about the independence that it's bringing them. But as far as higher learning is concerned, it's kind of boring or they don't know if they want to be worked that hard or whatever. But it's just a short time from third grade to 12th grade, and, you know, but the kids think it's forever. But it's not. All of a sudden, if you don't pay attention, you're a senior, and you got a 65 average.
Yeah.
You know?
You're still a graduate, but now what are you going to do?
And you've missed so much. So I would say to a young Kevin, pay attention. And like I tell my grandkids, they both graduated college already. The youngest one just got her master's degree. What I told both of them was, you've heard of the expression, you know, everybody's cramming for exams. And I said, do you know what that is? And I said, yeah. The couple of days before, you're just going over everything. And then I said, yeah, you're going over everything because you blew off a couple of classes. So you missed the assignments and you didn't do the proper reading. So now you're crammed. But if you go to every class and you pay attention and you do the little bit of homework that they give you, college isn't that tough. You don't have to cram. It's just, you know, you just show up that day. And you'll do fine. So that's part of the
message.
That I'd give them. Yeah.
Because I mean, you said you went back. You graduated 25 years after.
Yeah, when my daughter Chrissy was like 17, I didn't let her get her license at 16 because her grades weren't good enough.
Okay.
You went to school with Chrissy, but she was a couple of years behind you.
She was a couple of years behind me.
Yeah. So I wouldn't let her get her license. So finally, when she was 17, she brought her grades up, and I said, okay, so you can get your license. And I put a down payment on a car and gave her a little payment book. So this is your car, you pay for it. I just put a pretty good down payment on it. It was a used car.
Yep.
A Rabbit.
Oh, no kidding.
Volkswagen Rabbit. Yeah. She loved that thing.
That's awesome.
Anyhow, once she got that license, it was like, where is she? She's gone all the time, right? So I'd come home from the restaurant at 10 o'clock at night or something, and she's still out. It's a Wednesday. You know, she'd be over at Lynn's house, so she'd be someplace. So I said, you know something? The one reason I never went back to college when I was younger, when I flunked out, was because I had proved to myself that I couldn't do it. I got a 0.9 average, but I never went to classes.
Right.
And I drank every day. You know, I had fun at college because I worked my butt off every weekend for my dad. So I was like, well, that's when everybody else is partying. So, and I'm working, so I'll party when everybody else is working.
Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that didn't work out too good. So, but it made me think that I just wasn't smart enough. So finally I just said, when she was gone all the time, I says, well, I think I'll take one course at New Hampshire College. I wasn't going to travel all the way to Durham. They had a campus here on the bypass. So I took an accounting course. I'm going to take something at least that's, you know, in the same strain as my business to help my business.
Right.
Yeah. So I took accounting 101, aced it. You know, I think I got, I don't know if I got 100 average, but it was so interesting. I loved it. Next semester, they're only 5 week semesters. So I said, I'm going to sign up for 102, you know, and so aced that one. Wow. Next semester, I'm thinking, but I don't want to take too much now. So I signed up for managerial accounting, aced that. I said, you know, maybe I could do this. So it took me 4 1/4 years, but I got a business degree.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And graduated with a 3.26, so which wasn't too bad because there were some courses that I was like I was in the old days. I wasn't interested, you know.
That's funny because I similar path. When I went back, it's so I like I said earlier that so I could do this, and I did bite off too much and I can chew. At one point, I was like, "What have I done?" But then you get that moment of clarity and say, "You know what? Suck it up."
Yeah.
Because I was working full time and I was taking a full class load.
Yeah.
So
I ended up doing the same thing at my third year there because you only can take classes as they come around. Or I'd have to go to Manchester. Yeah. And this was just down the street from Yokins. I'm still working 80 hours a week.
Right.
And then that would be a low week, you know. So I would go to work some days and come home the next day. I go to work at 7 o'clock in the morning to do a chamber breakfast. And then I'd have a Rotary Club at noontime or something like that. And then we'd have a huge corporate party from 8 till 1 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. I'm the last one in, the last one out. You know, first one in, last
turn,
one out.
Turn the lights on, turn them off on the way out.
Yeah, so, and I mean, so I was carrying a full load at work. Plus, I was bringing my daughter up by myself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that she started living with me when she was 10.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had help. My sister-in-law helped me, and some of the neighborhood girls helped out. And I had a couple of full-time sitters in the summertime. Yeah. But I had a pool back then behind the house in Ellen Park.
So I got to ask,
Did
my father-in-law help you bury that, or you ended up getting rid of it or something? Did you end up?
He helped me put the cement pad around it.
Okay. All right. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he was a mason.
Yeah. He was a mason.
Yeah. And then Billy Pafford put the fireplace in. I had a fireplace out there. And this is an Ellen Park.
Yeah.
The backyard was probably worth more than the house. It really was.
Yeah.
I think I paid like $5,000 or $6,000 for the pool. It was a plastic liner, 16 by 32. Yeah. But with the fence and then the concrete and the fireplace and all that kind of stuff, I only paid $19,500 for the house, you know, in 67. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And then John Elwin Stone, who owned the property behind me, that just got the forestry center there.
Yeah.
he passed away, and I had permission from him to go 10 or 12 feet over the property line because it was all wetlands anyhow.
Yeah.
But we put nothing in writing. When he died, he left the property to the state, and they came in, surveyed it, and said, you got to take the pool out. So, yeah, had to bulldoze the pool. Just another little bump in the road.
That's it. So I'll close with this question, because I know I you hear it a lot. And I started this podcast, Kevin, just so that I think where Portsmouth is now and where it was, I don't necessarily always think changes are bad. I think some are good. But I always interested in someone, because you were right in the middle of it. I mean, you've seen so much. And I think I don't want that perspective lost on people with it. But Portsmouth, I guess my question is this. What do you think nowadays? You think it's, you know what I mean, where it is, direction it's going, all of that, I guess.
Well, I grew up on Market Street from the time I was 3 years old to the time I was 11 years old or whatever. So that was my basic education, was on Market Street. I mean, my mother would say, why don't you guys go out and play on the pavement? And at Farragut School, our playground was pavement.
Right.
The other schools, elementary schools, had grass. We didn't. We were tough, though.
Yeah.
But the only heartburn I get is what they did to the Italian people.
The North End.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the urban renewal project.
That's what it was, yes.
I think that was Lyndon Johnson. Somebody could have come in, and government could have interested a few of these entrepreneurs to buy up some of that property and maybe change it slowly and put some apartments in there or whatever. Because on the corner of Deer and Market, going out towards Nobles Island, there were some rickety old buildings and there were fire traps. Those things should have gone. But they took perfectly wonderful houses that these people lived in, and just some of them they saved and moved, and that. But they shipped everybody out of that section of town.
Yeah,
made a move.
Yeah,
and I don't know what happened to all those people. That happened during, I had already moved from downtown.
Yeah,
so that I don't like. And then how long did it take them to finally start redeveloping all that? It was
years.
Yes, yeah, it was a failed system till a lot of these people, local developers got involved. And what they've done, I like it.
Yeah.
I like the Boston look about the townhouses and that kind of thing. And I like that they've kept, everybody talks about brick and granite. You know, maybe we've got enough brick and granite.
Yeah.
You know? But that's what you get in downtown areas. You don't get clapboard siding houses in downtown, you know, and in the cities.
Yeah.
You know, so I think they've done a great job. It's I don't know if you've been to Edinburgh, Scotland or not, but I had the pleasure of taking my daughter and my grandkids there. It's one of my bucket list. And they have the old town of Edinburgh, and across the river they got the industrial part. They separated them, and they did a great job with it. Well, they've kind of separated it here. They've kept the old downtown area.
Yeah.
And I think it's good. I you know.
Excellent.
Yeah, excellent. It's good. It's good for the businesses. That this is when Harry and I were running the business. My brother Harry and I were running the business together. We used to put these packets together for the Golden Age groups and all that, and we'd get tickets to the Strawberry Bank and lunch at Yokin's and the Whale Watch, all in one ticket for like $15.
That's awesome.
But we got these other businesses to participate in that, if they were breaking even or making a dollar ahead, you know, it's better than having a half empty boat.
Absolutely.
I can remember one luncheon time at Yokin's. We had 19 buses. You added up at 50 people a bus. This is a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, and most of them were going, some of them were Nova Scotia trips or whatever. Yeah. We didn't have anything special for that, except we'd give them, what we had was a tour luncheon. And they could come in and order anything off of this tour lunch, and there were four different meals they could order. So it wasn't like, okay, you got to eat the haddock and that's it.
That's it, yeah.
You know, you get Salisbury steak, that's it, you know. So we put these tour packages together, and they seemed to work out pretty well. Well, that kind of business just started going away. Well, and Portsmouth wasn't a destination town. We were trying to make it that way.
Yeah.
We were trying to bring these buses in and do it. And there was a lot of people that were downtown that would participating in that to, you know, like the Thomas Layton.
And, right.
And there was another boat at the time. I can't remember the name of it. And so, yeah, but now it's a destination, you know, so it helps everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I agree with you, too. And that's why I kind of preface it as like not all change is necessarily bad. And I still think that some of the history of old school Portsmouth is still there. Do you know what I mean?
There's a few of us left.
Yeah. And I'm going to get you all so that we can get everything recorded here. But I appreciate your time. I appreciate your willingness to come down, Kevin. And I can't thank you enough for probably keeping some of my high school classmates out of trouble by keeping them working. So I can't thank you enough.
I appreciate the opportunity. And it's been a real pleasure on my part to be here to go over all this stuff and talk about history.
Yeah, and thank you for the other suggestions that we talked about offline, too.
Okay.
This concludes Kevin McLeod, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as Jeff and I did. Thank you again, and you'll be hearing from us real soon. Take care.